Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Friday, February 25th. Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe? Cooper?
Dockstader,
Driscoll, Emmerich, Esquivel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Anderson,
here.
Coe, 30 present.
Prayer by Reverend Robinson.
Thank you again for letting me be with you this week. It has truly been a joy and a privilege. Let us pray. Gracious God, whose grace redeems all things, whose justice brings peace, and whose love extends beyond all boundaries, we thank you this day for the people who have become a part of our lives, for those for whom we have found an immediate affinity, for they bring freshness to our lives, joy to our spirits, and love to our hearts. We thank you also for those we have not liked, for those who are very different from us, for they have challenged us to listen intentionally, understand deeply, and think differently. We thank you for those whom we have yet to meet, for we know that each encounter has the potential to reveal more about what it means to live in community. Because of our gratitude for all your people, we lift up all those who suffer from illness or injury, who fear from uncertainty and change, who feel the pain of loneliness and loss. We seek your grace for ourselves as well, for we are people unfinished in what you would have us be. We who are privileged to be loved by you seek your blessing for ourselves and for all you call your children. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Meeting clerk, please read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 24th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, that report has been adopted. Doctor for the day is Shannon Evans, and Dr. Evans is from... Cheyenne, nurse of the day. We don't have a nurse today. On this day in Wyoming history, in 1961, the state purchased Sport Fetterman, and that was approved on that date. On this day in United States history, in 1913, the 16th Amendment to the Constitution, which allows for income tax, was ratified. Joint Conference Committee on Senate File 1. Senator Nicholas, are you ready in regard to that report? We'd ask that the reading clerk read in that report at this time.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations. Signing for the Senate, Senators Nicholas, Hastert, Meyer, Peterson, Von Flatern. Signing for the House, Representatives Berger, Esquivel, Harshman, Stewart, and Wallace.
Go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Joint Conference Committee report for Senate File 1 and ask that you vote aye. The easiest way for me to take you through. You've got two sort of cheat sheets that were handed out to you. One is a summary, and the other is a longer one. And I'd like to start with the longest one, which is pages 1 through 14. And you can see that the page numbers are up on the top. Let me tell you just a little bit about some of the factors that go into a conference committee. This was not the most difficult conference committee. There were fewer items to be resolved, fewer dollars in controversy. As we're doing a conference committee, one of the first things that you do as a practical matter is figure out what is the midpoint between both houses. And you want to make sure that obviously we want the position to be closer to the Senate position than the House position, if we can. But as a practical matter, midpoint is all you can expect. And it's important to keep your midpoint focused, because if you have different amendments on the House side, different on the Senate, you could actually spend more than both houses if you're not careful in how you compromise. Another issue that's sort of the bias of Appropriations Committee is that when you're compromising items, your preference is for one-time items, items that you spend once and not are reoccurring expenses. And so the reoccurring expenses are things that drive up your budget. So they're kind of the things that you really scrutinize closely. What I want to do is, on these documents, if you turn to the last page, which is the last page 14, that is sort of that's a summary of, it's the colored spreadsheet. It's page 14 on the handout. And frankly, it summarizes. It's the way that's actually off my spreadsheet, off our computer, and it's where I keep track of where the midpoint is between the two houses and where we're spending. So if you look at the midpoints houses, this is on the bottom box. The items that were in play is that the first item is the House had $1 million for local fire districts. For quiet zones, we had reduced the JAC recommendation by $3 million. The House had a developmental disabilities amendment for $2.2 million. There was a governor's recommendation for $1 million, or residents recall, for $1 million. We had health grants for $2 million. The House had $3 million for the ethanol credit. That was really a fund switch, which would have moved the $3 million, which is presently paid out of the highway fund, would have moved it to the general fund. You'll recall that the effect of that is that so long as those funds are being paid out of the highway funds, a portion of that is paid for by the county's payments, portion by the state's. And then you have the critical access rural hospitals. The House had put $2 million in for those grants. And most of those you'll be familiar with, because most of them had corresponding amendments on the House, on the Senate. So the House's total expenditures were $6 million, and the Senate's was $346 million. So the midpoint between the two was $2.8 million. And that's where we began. So that's a sheet that we don't show to the House. It's just our worksheet. And there is one more critical amendment that is very significant, and that is, in addition to the DD appropriation for $2.2 million, the House had put in a provision to eliminate the rebasing for nursing homes. And that was it would have taken off. Right now there's a prohibition for rebasing in the budget. The House had eliminated that prohibition. It is not clear under the House's language whether they intended for the rebasing to take place during this biennium, or whether they would go out and do the rebasing and the money would flow to the next biennium. if you eliminate rebasing, probably there would have been more money flowing to nursing homes during this biennium. However, there's no appropriation for that rebasing requirement. So it was unclear with respect to what the Department of Health would have done if they eliminated the rebasing, or if they eliminated the prohibition for rebasing. One of the things that the Department of Health could have done is said, well, now that is eliminated, gone out and rebased and started paying higher payments to the nursing home, and then come to us next year and said, now, by the way, we're $100 million short. We made inquiry, and it certainly wasn't clear, but the House did not put a dollar, attach a dollar amount to that footnote. And I'm going to take you through to show you, and it's what happened, or I'll take you through a spreadsheet to explain that more. The final decision is showed up on the right. The final decision of the Joint Conference Committee was local fire districts held on to their entire $1 million. The employee compensation provision, that was, you recall, we said of the $7.7 million set aside for market pay for state employees, we allowed $600,000 of that to go to the Wyoming Supreme Court employees so long as they submit their employees' job descriptions to A&I and they accurately set the salaries and they're prohibited from paying more. We did receive a letter from the Supreme Court saying we appreciate the $600,000. We don't appreciate having to work with A&I. We think that part's unconstitutional. We would like we'd like you to give us the money and eliminate the restrictions on the use of those funds. That was rejected. Both houses agreed to keep with the Senate's provision on that, so there is up to $600,000 made available for judicial salary market pay, but they're required to provide those market pay consistent with A&I's market studies. With respect to quiet zones, we ultimately only eliminated $1 million, taking the full dollars up to $5 million. Funding for DD programs was eliminated entirely, and the House position with respect to rebasing was rejected. So both provisions that would have would put more money into the Department of Health into ongoing programs were eliminated, both of those. With respect to the governor's residence, we agreed to go down to $450,000. You recall that's just money set aside for potential acquisition of land for a new governor's residence. We concluded that $450,000 should be enough, and if it's not, we'll come back later. The House's position for ethanol credit was eliminated entirely, and the House's position for the critical access rural hospitals of $1 million or $2 million was reduced in half. The health care grants was put on the Senate, was retained in full, $100,000. The Senate wanted to keep that $100,000 in because it's a small amount, and we felt that the program couldn't be fulfilled without the $100,000 full. That's the reason why on our side of the ledger we gave a bigger discount to the governor's residence, partly to pay for the critical or the health care grants. The total final compromise cost an additional $1.5 million, and you'll see that that is closer to the Senate ledger than it is to the House position. The House, obviously, they spent more. They had, and as we always do with them, we say, look, you spent more. You can give us, as long as we get closer to the Senate side, we'll allow you to sort of divvy it up. And as you can see, they gave up a bunch of their spending items to help out Southeast Wyoming, which is principally the quiet zones and the local fire districts. So that is the summary of what we did. I did think we needed to give you the information that we looked at with respect to some of these key matters involving the Department of Health. If you turn over to pages Let's begin with pages 12 and 13. Pages 12 and 13 is, it turns out, folks, that the Department of Health has already engaged a firm named Myers and Stauffer to give them information with respect to the potential rebasing and what it would look like. And if you look at those pages, you can see that we don't know a lot about this study because it's not gone through the hearing stages. But at least we know that some of this information has been supplied, and you can see the Department of Health believes that the nursing home rebasing, incidentally, there's two aspects of rebasing. One is, are the costs that we're paying reimbursing hospitals or nursing homes for their cost, are they sufficient to pay their cost? The other issue that happens with rebasing is that if they go around and look at the nursing homes, and it might be that one is only getting 80% of their cost returned, one is 90%, and so you rebase among you have a finite pie, and how it's allocated can be affected by the rebasing process, as well as total dollars. But you can see there that the total cost it ranges about $13 million to. Paragraph scenario 3 is the one that the Department of Health was recommending, and that's about $8.5 million. The Department of Health advised us in a communication that they intend to put this in their exception request coming in to the budget process next year. So this issue we will revisit, and this is the really the consequences of what likely would have happened if the House's position had been sustained. That position was taken off, but it's important that you could see that we took a look at that. With respect to the issue of the developmentally disabled program, the DD program, if you look at page 11, you could see what has happened. The DD program were... they did share in some of the 10% cuts that other agencies did, but in the first budget, in the original budget, we returned 6% of the funding back to them. And then with the if we had adopted the Senate's position, they would have recovered a total of 14% increases. But by having the... by rejecting that, the increases remain at that 6.7%, and you can see that those percentages aren't shared equally. The preschool services are up 23%, and the adult waivers are up about 6.82%, so they've divided those increases a little bit different. So our conclusion was that... The DD program, when we do the analysis, has received a 6% increase already in the existing budget. We'll be back to address it in the exception budget request. We know that they'll be asking for those requests. There were some increases in the original budget already given, which would be I'm not catching it here. It'll come to me in a second. Actually, the 2010 budget bill is up on the top, and then on the 2011 bill, we did give the $1.5 million for preschools was granted. It was the $2.551 that was not awarded. So the preschools will be up 19% even with the existing budget. So it's somewhere we've got the accounting with the budget is more like 10% increase without. It's about a 10% increase that you see just as the budget is and that we already funded. The other spreadsheets are on this handout are more for when you want to just look at the summary of everything that's been taking place. One and two are the conference reports with the new language. One, two, three, and four is the conference report. Pages 5 and 6 are the a summary of all the changes and the positions that we take. When you look over on page 5, if you want to see how we dealt with each one, on the far right column you'll see an AH. That means adopted the House position. So you begin with the identical amendments. We're now at the top of page 5. We begin with identical amendments, and just to get things off the table, we ordinarily just adopt the House position. So that's the AHs. You go down to the non-identical amendments. You see the A, that means adopted. So we adopted the House second reading number 22 amendment that gave $1 million to the local fire districts in the southeast Wyoming. We deleted the language requiring a House provision that required the Secretary of State to redevise their website to a user-friendly interface. So that's what the D means, is deleted. We adopted the next two Senate positions, which are the judicial salary notes. The second one is the provision from the Senate saying the CIO would serve at the pleasure of the governor rather than A&I director. At the bottom of the page, you see a DFA. DFA stands for delete and further amend. So if it's a delete and further amend, it means that we deleted it, further amended it with new positions or with a new provision. The House had added two full-time positions for DEQ. We compromised in there and added one additional DEQ position in the land quality permitting process. On the page, top of page 6, you'll see that with respect to the railroad quiet zones, we deleted, further amended by deleting the total of $1 million from the for the budget, leaving the quiet zones with $5 million. There, on the health care financing, that's the language that the House had that would have deleted the cost of living increases for nursing homes. That was deleted. The Senate position providing more funding for developmental disabilities, adding the 4% provider increase, that was deleted. On the next one is the Senate position with respect to the spending $45,000 to oversee and monitor the educational standards provider report. That was adopted. We adopted the the House position with respect to the partition fence around the Ranch A facility. So that's adopted, and we deleted the Senate. There was just a tad bit difference in the language of both houses, and the staff recommended using the House position language. With respect to the tourism board that provides that $1.3 million was to go into one marketing rather than two markets, we adopted the House position. That did not add any more money. It just allowed more money to be directed into one market. Down below is the both of the houses had language with respect to a report from UW on student success. We deleted both of the houses' provisions. They had divided their amendment. We adopted the Senate position. With respect to correctional operations, changing this would be a House position providing a footnote 3 to include sex offender treatment program in the agency's standard budget request. This simply extended the reversion date to the fiscal year 13 and 14, no new monies. We adopted that position. The school foundation program amendment, this is the one allowing state – oh, let me stop there for a moment. You recall there were two things with respect to the recapture districts. In the House, the House had said for the recapture districts, they should be required to treat any capital gains and earnings that they earn as a state resource, which means it would be deducted from their block grant. On the Senate side, we had rejected that, but we had required the recapture districts to pay 6% interest on any loans that they took from the state from the beginning of the loan till repayment. The final action was to delete the Senate position and accept the House position, And it seemed from the discussion that the for the recapture districts, paying 6% interest on money they're borrowing was seemed inequitable to them. And but on the other hand, insisting that they take their capital gains and earnings off their recapture money and treat them as estate resources was more appropriate. So we rejected the Senate, adopted the House in that respect. With respect to the governor's residence, I've already told you we kept the Senate position but reduced it to $450,000. The House had put a provision on the Veterans Cemetery Bridge near Evansville. And they had added a footnote to require that there be a memorandum of understanding with the town of Evansville on the use of the road that leads to the bridge. And after explanation, it sounded like it was an appropriate amendment, and we adopted the House amendment. Now I'm over on page 7 of the cheat sheets. With respect to the CWC healthcare science facilities in the north and the Sheridan facility, you'll recall that we had a variety of amendments. So what we ultimately did is deleted and further amended all of the amendments to put them all together so they'd all work. But that was just a language clarification. Same is true for the $10 million to local distribution. We adopted the House provision because, as you recall, the Senate first put it into capital construction, then later into direct distribution. So that was adopted. With respect to data center recruitment, that was the footnote for the to eliminate Industrial Siting Act responsibility. That was adopted. The ethanol tax credit was adopted on the House side, but that was rejected and deleted from the conference report. Critical Aspects Rural Hospital Technology Grants, this is for the IT grants for hospitals, rural hospitals to get their IT systems, their accounting systems up to current standards. That was reduced to half. It was a House amendment. Health Education Grants came on the Senate side. That was a adopted, and the Senate position with respect to requiring a board expenditures of state superinstruction, this is the PTSB requirement. You recall with the PTSB, we put a footnote that required that they would provide the data for our accountability, and if they didn't, there would be a sanction. That was adopted. And then the Senate had a transfer from the Omnibus Permanent Land Income Fund to the Permanent Land Fund, the $7 million, that was adopted. And then page 8 is just more of a summary. Now, this page 8, when you go to there, it really looks at some of the things that are in the original bill, the supplemental bill, and we provide that more for take-home purposes so you could see it. Mr. President, I think that's the explanation. It's a good time to stand for questions.
Questions? Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm not really rising to ask a question. Mr. President, I voted against the budget on third reading and intend to vote against this conference report, and let me explain why. I have two major concerns in the work we've done. One was that I think we're wise to put a good deal of money into savings, but given the multiple risks that we are facing with our revenue in the relatively near term, I thought that the balance should have been more to savings we could get at unless being tipped into the permanent mineral trust funds. That was not an issue at in the conference. I think, as I understand the conference, and the budget is passed, both houses are all the same on that one. Second, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I am concerned that we have underfunded the Medicaid program, and we've had quite a discussion here on the floor about that. Our strategy has been too often to say, okay, we've put all these requirements on or acquiesced in the requirements that the feds have put on, and we've balance the budget to what we thought it ought to be by whacking the providers because we're so constrained in what else we can do. I'm concerned that that's getting us in trouble. It's passing a hidden tax off onto the people back home and their health care services. I'm concerned in the Medicaid program, in the DD and the nursing home populations, that we are causing quite a bit of hardship and are going to cause difficulties with the quality of service that's provided. And, Mr. President, I wish I could be more definitive in what I thought was going on in Medicaid, but I don't have much confidence in the projections that we're getting out of the Department of Health, because I don't think they understand their costs. And that's something I hope will change. But I am concerned that we have done too much there and are going to have a nasty surprise a year from now. Hopefully it won't come before we're in session again. But for that set of reasons, I intend to vote against the conference report. I'm not urging anybody else to do the same. I'm just expressing my reasons.
Go ahead, Senator Coe, and then we'll go to Senator Landon.
President, thank you. I continue to be more concerned about the DD program than anything else in here. I continue to believe that we're getting further behind. I know that you gave a good explanation. We put 6% more into that. I would have liked to have seen something in there. I think we had a good discussion on this floor. I would like to have seen us split that. How much discussion did you have on that? Because I don't know how other members of the body feel, and I was a co-chair of that committee, but I continue to feel that we're getting further and further and further behind on the DD programs. So what was the discussion you had?
Are there other questions before Senator Nicholas? Senator Landon, you were up. Why don't you go ahead, and then we'll go to Senator Nicholas here to kind of close this thing up.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would just appreciate a little bit of help from our appropriation chair, just from an overall standpoint. Maybe give us a little bit of help from a goldenrod perspective. I think I know about where we landed. We had some unanticipated revenues we came down here with. We obviously, you know, spent some money. But how much did we put in the bank, and how much did we spend? How much are we carrying forward? Just sort of an overall perspective, I'd be grateful for that. Thank you, Mr. President.
All right. Senator Von Flater, you've got some things?
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to elaborate on the DD funding. We did have quite a bit of discussion, and I am also very disappointed that we didn't add to that. That was kind of a goal of mine, that we'd add money. But if you go to page 11 of the big handout, and this is what they presented in our discussion, you'll notice that they show with the cut they took at the top left in the 2008 budget, and then 2010, what we're living under today. And then as we went into this 2011 supplemental, and if you'd put that money in there that we had hoped would go into DD, you'll notice if you go to the far right, bottom set of numbers, bottom number on the far right, it would have put them about 14% above spending of what we had in 08. So hopefully next year we're ready to put some money into this program, take that waiver list down to, ultimately zero. But for right now, this would have put them above other agencies, pretty much above everybody at this point. So give us another year and we'll get after that.
Senator Schiffer, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, and before the chairman takes his shot, was there any discussion that as we fall further behind in the DD area, the failsafe is the Life Learning Center, you know, the institution at Lander, and was there any discussion, is the capacity there as community services contract? That's where we're going to pick them up at. That center has to take them. What was the discussion there? Because one way or the other, I suspect we're going to pick them up somewhere. And I'd like to know One, is the $45 million enough to operate that center if they do get more patients? And if so, will it last them through the biennium, and then we can adjust from there?
Senator Bebout, you have something for the chairman?
Now, thank you, Mr. President. Just more on the big picture items, and we looked at the goldenrod yesterday. We were at $240 million additional. The House was $245 million, and I know we compromised in between. But my recollection is the surplus that we had going into this particular supplemental budget bill was around $600 million, and you subtract roughly $240 million, that's $360 million. And I know a lot of it went to the LSRA and some of it went to the SPRAW accounts. Could the chairman of the Appropriations Committee give us a better understanding of how that money was distributed?
Senator Cooper, go ahead.
Thank you. This is a question for the Appropriations Chair on the budget. On page 12, there was some discussion there about the Medicaid expenditures, and I know that I had received several calls from nursing home facilities before I came down to the session this year, and were asking about the fact that in the past, even though they had been reimbursed at the maybe 80% level, that somehow or another at the end of the year they were able to submit their bills and be reimbursed an additional amount of money if there was money left over. Was there any discussion in there on how that would work, or would that continue as far as this part of the budget was concerned?
Other questions for the chairman before he responds? Seeing none, I guess Senator Nicholas is quite a listener for you.
If you take a look, let's do the summary first. Folks, when you look at the goldenrod, the difference in between the House position and the Senate position is generally reflected on the transfer from the budget reserve account to the LSRA. So where you go down under other projected available balances, and you'll see that there's $1 billion in the budget or in the LSRA, and the transfer into the extra transfers into it from the on the Senate side is $6.5 million. And the House was $848,000. If the conference report is adopted on both houses, the final position is going to reflect that the Senate is going to be a little bit more than that. It's going to be somewhere between those positions. I would expect it to be about $5 million contribution to the LSRA. So where the Senate is sitting there at 6.5, what I would expect in the final report is about $5 million transfer to this. Now, when we left last year, the reserve in the LSRA was about $700 million. So this budget adds about $300 million into the LSRA above and beyond when we left the budget. And the reason for that is that we created budget provisions now where it used to be all the money that was excess would sit in the budget reserve account and grow the size of the budget reserve account. As a result of this sweep that we provide in, that money is swept in. So we increased our reserves by about $300 million over by the surpluses that came to us as a result of gas prices coming in higher than we anticipated. I think that answers the question. So we have increased our reserves for the future to deal with things that, frankly, I'll have to concur with my colleagues, our colleague from Natrona County, with respect to the issue of Department of Health. It is a concerning issue. As I've described before to you, our expenses for the Department of Health have gone up proportionally, almost directly with unemployment. And we've put almost $66 million into of just general fund money. You double that for the with federal money, and that's for 1 year. So you're sitting out there, the our extra expenses to the Department of Health that we put in, carried forward to the next biennium, is going to be about $260 million. How do I calculate that? We put in about $66 million worth of general fund. You double that, approximately $130 million for 1 year. When we bring that back into next year's budget, it's $260 million approximately. That's the increase. So, folks, it's not as though we turned a blind eye to our health responsibilities. We understand them. And we've put a huge amount of money in. But in controlling our expenses, we've had to say no to some things. And one of the things that we did was we tried to freeze a lot of payments. So when we froze payments to and took away the rebasing from the nursing homes, we did that at a time when we knew that our expenses for the Department of Health are going to go up in the order of $260 million for the next biennium. They weren't easy decisions. With respect to DD, you know, the DD folks came to the Appropriations Committee and said what we would like to do, and, you know, you gave us a 10% cut. We did that to all agencies. They came in last year and said, we just can't live with that. We've got to have more money. We need 6% back. So we gave them 6% back. Then they came into the Appropriations Committee and said, well, if you will allow us to count more days, so we get more days counted, then we can pick up our extra costs through those additional days, and that's the $1.5 million that the JAC allowed. Frankly, I thought that during those hearings that was going to take care of the DD program. Having got the extra day compensation, then they came to the Senate and said, now, we want a 4% on top of that, so that what they're asking for then is 10% plus to be compensated for extra days. And it seems to me that they were probably only, certainly they wanted them both, but the reason for the impetus of going back and recalculating to get more days of compensation so that for each patient there are more days they're being compensated for was to pick up part of the loss from the 10% cut. So the way it worked out is that, I think that they were working the system pretty well. They go to the JAC and get the extra days, and they come to the Senate and they get the extra 4%. What they ended up with is the extra days and not the 4%. So they probably they would have gotten a 14% increase if they had sustained the position. What they ended up with is the 6% in the main or last year's budget and the extra days of $1.5 million, which really gets them back about the 10% that we originally cut. So in effect, they're the one agency out there that didn't receive any or have recovered all of the cuts that we gave when things were tough. And once again, it seems to me of all of the agencies, they've been treated the best. They're the only one that got their 10% back. With respect to the issue of if additional services are, and to go back to Lander, we simply didn't have those discussions. Frankly, we believe that by restoring the 6%, by compensating the extra days, the $1.5 million, that properly run the DD centers will do fine. Are there some that had some management issues? Sure. But it is our expectation that there will be proper management, and like everybody else, they'll pay attention to their budgets. Mr. President, I think that answers all the questions.
Any other things? We won't restrict the chair to just two times. If there's a question that needs to be answered, we'll deal with it. I think this is significant. Go ahead, Senator Coe.
Very comfortable with the explanation that they gave on the DD program, and I think the Appropriations Committee and the Conference Committee has worked very well, and I think they bring a good compromise to us, and I'd urge that we support the bill.
Thank you. Other commentary? I heard a questions being called out there. The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee number 1 report in reference to Senate File 1, and you've been asked to vote aye. I'd ask the Chief Clerk to please call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report in regard to Senate File 1, the budget bill. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, as always the case, I always leave to go in the back room to fact check everything to make sure I got it right. The staff says that I should have been more accurate in describing why the $300 million arose. It is not arising as a result of anything that's happened in this biennium. Those are really the excess reserves that took place from the 2009-10. So they were one-time dollars. We won't see those anymore. So the distinction I simply made is I said that there's a consequence of present revenues being higher than forecast, and the current Craig report, that's wrong. They're essentially the realized one-time surpluses that took place from the last biennium because we had more revenues than expected.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, I'd just like to say, having the bully pulpit in regard to going on record, to thank you and complimenting you and your committee in regard to all the work that it takes to arrive at these points. The tremendous amount of not only work, but the organization is just almost mind-boggling. And also in back of you is staff, and we would say to staff that without you, none of us would be able to reach these proportions of success and accuracy in that. So with that, I'd say to you and your committee that thank you very much, and I think the people of Wyoming have much to be thankful for and proud of the work that you do for them. So thank you. That then brings us to bills on second reading. House Bill 23, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 23, Sex Offender Registration Amendment, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee.
There is an amendment. I'd ask the reading clerk to read that amendment in at this time.
House Bill 23, second reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 5.
Senator Scott, would you like to move in and speak to that first amendment, please? Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is deal with a concern that discussed a bit in Committee of the Whole. What we're doing is we're putting a bunch of new requirements in, particularly with regard to juvenile offenders. And the reason we're doing it is there's been considerable testimony on some people who are repeat offenders, particularly repeat offenders as juveniles. And the word isn't getting out, and proper steps aren't being taken to prevent that. What the bill does, though, as I read it, is that it reaches back and says juvenile offenders who were offenders clear all the way back to 1985 are going to get subject to these requirements, so that 1985 is 26 years ago. So that somebody who is an offender at age 17 is now at age 43, if I've done my math right, something like that, going to get stuck with a registration requirement, and if they're being stuck with it as a new requirement, they haven't been in that kind of trouble since then. They've cured up, they've grown up, which is what happens to most of these juvenile offenders. They grow up and they don't reoffend. And all of a sudden you've put this registration burden on them. You've potentially held them up to, if the word gets out, difficulties dealing with the rest of the community, difficulties dealing with law enforcement. And, Mr. President, I don't think that's reasonable. So what this amendment does is goes back and says, for those who are convicted of offense subject to registration pursuant to these amendments, that it applies only to those who are sentenced after July 1, 2001. In other words, 10 years after the effective date of this act. And those you're starting to get the people who might still reoffend, and you aren't reaching back into the ones for whom this is ancient history. That's what the amendment does, and I would urge the Senate to adopt it. Otherwise, I think we're going to put an unreasonable burden on some people.
Any discussion? Senator Landon, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank the good senator to my left for bringing this amendment, and I rise in favor of the amendment. Gave a lot of thought to this particular bill last night, and frankly, I'm still struggling with how I'm going to land on it, because what we're doing is we're requiring juveniles to register now. And the only problem with this amendment is it might not even go far enough. I heard the story of a couple yesterday. The gentleman was accused of statutory. I think he's 27 now. She's 21 or 2. They're married, couple kids. And I just couldn't get that particular case out of my mind, thinking, you know, now we're going to dip back in and we're going to force somebody like that to register. So I think this is a good amendment, and I would encourage you to support it.
Other discussion? Senator Perkins, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the good senator from my Pell Center from Natrona County bringing this to my attention yesterday. It gave me a chance to call and visit with the folks who administer this program over at the Department of or Division of Criminal Investigation. As we went through it, the response, as we discussed it and he thought about it, the response he says he didn't know how this would affect the federal review of this, but ultimately it made a lot of sense to him that individuals who, particularly in the ones that my other, Pell Center from Natrona County that's more height impaired than the tallest of the senators from Natrona County, was that in those instances, those persons would probably only be on the list for 10 years anyway, and then they would be eligible to come off the list. And so actually the 10-year time frame made a lot of sense to him individually, and he thought that that was probably an appropriate limitation, particularly for those instances that are just like the good senator who just spoke talked about. And so with that, I think that's an appropriate amendment and would encourage you its support.
Other discussion? Seeing none, question being called. Question before us in regard to second reading amendment number 1, Senate file 23. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any other discussion in regard to the bill? Seeing none. House Bill 23, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 40, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 40, compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee.
Is there any discussion? No amendments? House Bill 40, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, It is so ordered. House Bill 42, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 42, Coroner Record Confidentiality, sponsored by Representative Gingery.
No amendments. Any discussion? House Bill 42, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 92, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 92, impersonation through electronic means, sponsored by Representative Lubnow.
No amendments. Discussion?
Mr. President?
Sir, Senator Perkins.
I want, on this House bill, there was some discussion yesterday about intent and what would be the intent. And I just wanted to explain where this bill is right now with respect to intent. So if somebody wanted to bring an intent issue on the next reading, they could do that. But ultimately, the amendment added, in addition to just the fact that someone impersonated another by electronic means, the amendment that passed yesterday from the standing committee added the fact that not only did the person impersonate another, but that they caused or attempted to cause harm in doing so. The purpose and the specific language of why we did that was that keeps that as what's called a general intent crime. The general intent is, and we've had this discussion earlier in the session, Mr. President, the general intent is simply you intended to do the act which caused the harm. So that's different from specific intent, which is that you actually intend to cause the harm that is in fact caused. And so I just wanted to explain that there is intent in the bill, but it's a general intent crime, much like a battery or something like that. You don't have to intend to hurt or to hit the person. Just the fact that you hit them, that can result in a battery charge. So it's like many other crimes, it's general intent as opposed to specific intent. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Thank you, Senator Perkins, for the information. We're going to House Bill 92, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 120, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 120, public meeting, sponsored by Representative Edmonds.
There is an amendment. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill 120, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 4, line 9.
Senator Cooper, would you like to move and speak to the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 120. Mr. President, the reason I've gone in and wanted to change its effective date, as you'll see on page 4, line 9, from July of 2011 to July 1, 2012, I guess because of three reasons. One of these reasons is the fact that if, in fact, this bill might take effect or was passed, we have to understand that these districts and these local governments don't really do their budgeting until the 1st of July. So it would be after that date that they would even be able to probably come up with the funding to purchase any of these recording devices or anything. And you have to understand some of these little districts and everything like meet in the basement of the little town hall, so they don't have a whole lot of equipment. And then also, this would also, they wouldn't be able to, as I said, put this in their budget or even be able to purchase that time. But also, there is a hope that I guess if this passes on and we're able to get a management council agreement for the Judiciary Council, maybe to possibly do a study on this, that this would give us time in another session to make and take into consideration any maybe recommendations that maybe that possible committee could make to the body of the legislature. So I thought this would just give us some more time and would ask your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Cooper. Go ahead, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Rising in opposition to the amendment, I'd submit to the body that probably those recording devices are minimal, especially in light of the millions of dollars that we are putting into our government operations. We just noticed that as we conferred this morning on our final budget. That's a minimal impact, and I would suggest to you that this piece of legislation would help in that study if it were to be enacted immediately. And And it would allow them to understand truly the process of open government, because certainly information is just fundamental to our government process, standing in opposition.
Another discussion? Go ahead, Senator Cooper.
Time, Mr. President. The fact of the matter is that a lot of these agencies that we're talking about, or these districts, are very small. Like I say, some of them meet in the basement of their town halls or wherever. And so it's not that they have a whole lot of money to be buying things. I guess besides that, you have to take into consideration the fact that they have to find out a way to store this equipment and how to store it. So if you're talking about counties and cities and towns, that's one thing. But we, as yet mentioned yesterday, we got like over 400 little districts out there. So take that into consideration.
Senator Barnard, the sponsor's taking his second time here. Sponsor having taken a second time, this question being called in regard to the second reading amendment number one. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Division being called, those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, stand. That amendment has passed. House Bill 120 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 167, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 167, Castle Doctrine Modification, sponsored by Representative Korlberg.
No amendments. Discussion. House Bill 167, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 190, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 190, Electronic Fine Submittal, sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
There is an amendment. I'd ask that that First Amendment be read in at this time.
House Bill 190, second reading amendment number one, page one, line five.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to speak to this amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 190. Folks, if you turn over to the second page of this bill, this eliminates the paragraph B that we talked about. And that was a provision for people to get a reduction in their fine if they pay over the Internet. I think that's just generally bad policy. I think if, regardless of how you pay your fine, it ought to be the full amount. And the truth is, if anybody's going to get a discount, it ought to be the poor guy that pays with cash. I urge your support of it.
Discussion, Senator Perkins, go ahead.
Chairman, I joined with the good chairman of appropriations on this amendment, and actually it came to me that the best incentive is to be able to pay this by distance. It occurred to me that a number of times I've been in the courtroom and seen someone go pay their fine, and they find out there's an outstanding warrant, and they're arrested at the counter. So actually there may be a significant incentive to pay by electronically, and so you may not need to offer them a monetary incentive, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Ready for question on the amendment? All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. That amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. House Bill 190, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 202, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 202, Railroad Fence Repair, sponsored by Representative Brown.
No amendments. Discussion. House Bill 202, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 206, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 206, Emergency Response Incident, sponsored by Representative Throne.
No amendments. House Bill 206, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 211, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 211, County Memorial Hospital Board Members Removal, sponsored by Representative Frone.
No amendments. Discussion? House Bill 211, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 215, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 215, Department of Health Reorganization, sponsored by Representative Lubnow.
No amendments. Discussion? House Bill 215, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 223, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 223, Property Disclosure Statement, Wind Estate, sponsored by Representative Brown.
No amendments. Discussion? House Bill 223, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 259, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 259, Ethanol Producer Tax Credit, sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
No amendments. Discussion? House Bill 259, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Joint Resolution, number one, second reading of the Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 1, District Court Commissioner's Authority, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee.
Comments? Questions? No amendments. House Joint Resolution number 1, having been read two separate times, shall a House Joint Resolution be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading, and Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list this morning? Third reading.
Mr. President, third reading consent list for today is as follows. House Bill 87, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions. House Bill 100, Game and Fish Land Acquisition. House Bill 138, Public Funds, Time Deposit Open Accounts Interest Rate. House Bill 154, Multiple Special Handicap License Plates. House Bill 174, Designated Transfer of State Lands. House Bill 179, Energy Improvement Program. House Bill 230, Eminent Domain, Wind Energy Collective Systems 2. House Bill 243, Human Remains, Training of Search and Rescue Dogs. House Bill 252, Review of State Executive Department Positions. House Bill 253, Wyoming Nurse Practice Act Amendment. House Bill 254, Property Taxation Appeals. House Bill 255, Veterans Tax Exemption.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Seeing no one. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 87, House Bill 100, House Bill 138, House Bill 154, House Bill 174, House Bill 179, House Bill 230, House Bill 243, House Bill 252, House Bill 253, House Bill 254, House Bill 255. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer. Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 87, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 87, 30 ayes. House Bill 100, are there any changes?
Jennings,
aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 100, 28 ayes, 2 noes. House Bill 138, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 138, 30 ayes. House Bill 154, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Von Flateren, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Hicks, aye to no. Hines, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no. Amrick, aye to no. Coe, aye to no.
Anderson, aye to no.
President Anderson, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 154, 17 ayes, 13 noes. House Bill 174, are there any changes? Schiffer, aye to no. Closing vote.
Jennings, aye to no.
Landon, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 174, 26 ayes, 4 noes. House Bill 179, are there any changes? Bebout, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 179, 28 ayes, 2 noes. House Bill 230, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 230, 30 ayes. House Bill 243, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 243, 30 ayes. House Bill 252, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 252, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 253, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 253, 30 ayes. House Bill 254, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 254, 30 ayes. House Bill 255, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 255, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 87, House Bill 100, House Bill 138, House Bill 154, House Bill 174, House Bill 179, House Bill 230, House Bill 243, House Bill 252, House Bill 253, House Bill 254, House Bill 255 have passed the Senate. Other third reading bills. Yes, Senator Johnson.
I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. I managed to talk with the gentleman that's the lab technician at the Department of Health Laboratory about blood testing. And first of all, the Department of Health does the blood and controlled substance testing. The criminal lab does the DNA. And so there's no way it can be done in the Department of Health. As far as he knew, there had never been a request for a DNA on a DUI. The request from law enforcement on DNA is for homicide and such crimes as that. He uses two tubes of blood for the drug testing. He uses one for alcohol and one for controlled substances. At the end of 1 year, if the case is completely gone, he puts them in the autoclave and finishes them off and disposes of them. So I hope that'll answer some questions on the use of blood and disposal, et cetera. Thank you, Mr. President.
With that, House Bill 29, third reading of the House bill.
House Bill 29, DUI Elimination of Right to Refuse Test, an act relating to driving under the influence, sponsored by Representative Gingery, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment, or several amendments. I'd ask the first be read in at this time.
House Bill 29, third reading amendment number 1, to engross copy, page 3 after line 18.
Senator Burns, you'd like to move and speak to the amendment, please?
Yes, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 29 and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, when we put the Johnson Amendment on there, it called for... it allowed for a situation where somebody has refused a test for a either breathalyzer or blood test for a warrant to be gotten. And what this does is it goes into the amendment, and down on line 29 of the amendment, accorded. Mr. President, usually when there is a search warrant gotten that somebody tries to get from a judge, they present the evidence to the judge as to here's why we need a search warrant for this because of the probable cause that we have. Mr. President, already in most cases with police, they already are recording the arrest with a car and the policeman is mic'd up. I just want to make sure that we can also get a recording of what the policeman is telling the judge when he is going to get that warrant, and so that can be checked for accuracy also. Mr. President, I may seem a little overwrought about this bill. I am not overwrought about it. I just don't like it. But we had an incident up in Sheridan about 3 years ago where there was a labor dispute going on between the police department and the city administration. And in the middle of all that, all of a sudden our mayor was pulled over for a DUI. And he was innocent. And in fact, the one of the things that helped sort out the entire case was the fact that all the evidence as to probable cause and so forth was recorded. And it resulted in the discharge of at least one officer and demotion of a couple of others. Mr. President, this is a major policy change that this state is taking up. As the sponsor of the bill said, and he cited quite a few cases that the Fifth Amendment does not apply to DUI cases. And that is the policy change that this state would be making if this bill passes. I would just like to make sure that the safeguards are in place to protect the person who is being prosecuted under a case with this, to make sure we have all the evidence possible, and so that warrant, when it's gotten, we know exactly what evidence was given to the judge before he issued the warrant.
Other discussion? Seeing none, question before us is regard to third reading amendment number 1. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment number 1 has passed. I would ask this Reading clerk, read in the second amendment at this time.
House Bill 29, third reading amendment number 2, corrected copy to engrossed copy, page 1, line 4.
Senator Burns, continue.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move amendment number 2, third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 29 and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, the good sponsor of the bill touched on this point in his privilege of the floor just before the bill was read in, and he said that it is common practice for them not to do anything with the blood other than to test for chemicals, drugs, and alcohol. And the fact that that's just what they do right now is just ducky. What this amendment says is that's all they can do with it.
Discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of this third amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Actually, this is the second amendment. All those opposed? The second amendment has passed. Now we are on third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 29. I'd ask that the third amendment be read in.
House Bill 29, third reading amendment number 3 to engross copy, page 3, line 18.
Senator Meyer, would you like to address the amendment?
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment to House Bill 29 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, I think the first two amendments were good. This really goes to part of what is presented to the judge and to aid in the determination of the necessity of a search warrant. And as we know that as technology is now, most of these things are recorded. This just puts forth the elements or the information actually that the judge should have in determining whether that search warrant is necessary. And those are a record of the video and audio and the circumstances that led to the probable cause, the motorist to be stopped, and any recording by video or audio of the contact or field sobriety tests that the officer administers. Mr. President, I was pretty in good shape as far as the warrant issuing here until yesterday we found out that part-time attorneys can actually issue warrants, and it may not actually be a judge. And so this, I think, makes sure that there is evidence that's that can be corroborating evidence in addition to just the officer saying, I think he was drunk, Judge, and we need a warrant. So I think that this, in conjunction with the other amendments that passed, would give the prosecutors basically ironclad evidence. If it's led to a prosecution, I think would aid in the prosecution, and I think it would also give people a comfort level that the search warrants weren't just a buddy system between the police officers and a part-time practicing attorney. So I would ask for your favorable consideration.
I'm going to call on Senator Scott, and then I'm going to go to the majority floor leader. Go ahead.
Mr. President, I've got a question on this, and Mr. President, maybe I've had just too much experience with farm equipment that, and maybe it doesn't apply here, but my experience is that you get fancy equipment and it's broke down some of the time. And just as a question of practicality, does that mean that if the officer, if he has a video camera, if it's broke down, he can't comply with the conditions, can't get a warrant, and can't really proceed on this section? So I have that practical question about how this amendment would work.
Go ahead, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against amendment, I like most of the amendments except for the last three lines. I mean, the fact of the matter is that these things they do exist. They are videotaping their stops and their arrests and so forth. But I'm not sure how they're going to communicate that to the judge. It says all of this information shall be available to the judge in aiding his determination. Now, what we're doing with this particular bill and with the Johnson Amendment and so forth was to provide remote ability for the judge to issue the search warrant. I'm not sure how they're going to be able to communicate a videotape and all of that to the judge certainly it would be available should the prosecution move forward. It'd be something that would have to be produced by the prosecutor to the defense counsel. But I think those three lines really make it almost impossible.
Senator Rothfussen, we'll go to Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, I'd like to ask that the amendment be divided based on the previous discussion so that lines 15 through 18, well, all on line 15 to the rest of the amendment are division number 2, and the balance of the amendment is division number 1. And while the second division doesn't do a whole heck of a lot standing alone, Mr. President, it does flow.
That is doable.
Excellent.
Would you like to speak to either division?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. On division number 1, I do feel that this goes a good ways.
Again, repeat for us what division 1 is.
Absolutely. Division 1, Mr. President, is the amendment up until line 15, the period after warrant.
Okay.
So, Mr. President, this is just the part of the amendment that specifically says that it needs to be videotaped. And I think that would go a long ways towards corroborating and assuaging some of the concerns that we have regarding this provision being misused, Mr. President.
Okay, any further discussion on Division 1 now? We are on the Division 1. Senator Christensen?
Mr. President, my concern with Division 1, rising on opposing it, is that it says an officer shall record through video and audio means all circumstances. That essentially requires all cars to have video and audio. Whether they're functioning or not, it may be. I'm not sure that all the law enforcement vehicles in the state of Wyoming have video and audio capabilities. So there's a real number dollar issue there.
Other discussion on Division 1, Senator Perkins.
On and against Division 1, Mr. President, in addition to what my good friend from Teton County just spoke about, keep in mind that there are other situations. There are cops who ride bicycles and actually apprehend individuals who do this, or officers that actually could be on a beat, could be walking. So it's not every instance that an officer is in the performance of his duty will he have necessarily access to both audio and visual, and with the other that coupled with the other issues that have been brought up by the other esteemed members of the body, urge you to resist Amendment 2, or excuse me, Amendment 1.
Other commentary in regard to Division 1. Senator Meyer, will you want to speak to that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, as to those circumstances there, I think technology has gone a long way. As technology increases, and most technology as far as recording devices, rather than being a tape now, is digital. And practically all digital information can be transmitted either via the internet or through some other means, and it's as simple as an instrument no larger than this. If you look at the advertising that you see on TV now, you've got 4G, 5G, maybe 6G networks. All of those things, you can make video phone calls back and forth. All that technology is available, to our departments, and it's really not that expensive to do that. A lot of the technology exists. It's portable. A officer on a bike could easily slip something the size of your cell phone in his pocket, or have it in his pocket and rigged up with a microphone. The microphones are actually contained in these. The cameras are contained in them. It's as simple as making sure that information is available to the judge, and it's easily transmittable. So I think the arguments that this is expensive, frankly, Mr. President, I don't believe it is that expensive. The determination on this is whether you think that a judge, just how much information does he need to make a good decision to issue a search warrant. If you're fine with just the Officer Bob saying to his buddy, the lawyer Jim, "Hey, let's get this guy and throw him down and get a blood sample out of him." Then, Mr. President, then you probably should vote against this. But if you think there should be something, maybe just a little bit higher standard to get a search warrant, that there's some evidence there that is actually some kind of a physical evidence that the person is not sober, then, Mr. President, I would ask that you support this one and the Second Division.
Any other discussion on regard to Division One? Senator Perkins?
For my second time on Division One. And just in response to that last issue, I guess the other question you have to ask is, why would you treat DUIs different from any other crime? Ultimately, any other crime that you can go get a search warrant for, we're not putting these requirements. So now we're going to set up a separate standard and a separate process to get a search warrant for a blood sample than we would for a rape victim, for any other type of crime that you're out there. We're creating a special protection or a special process for DUI only. And I think one of the whole purposes behind this was to get it back to where it was on par with other crimes. And I don't quite understand why we would go this extra mile on DUI issues that we wouldn't afford other crimes that have significantly more serious impact for both victims and the accused.
Anyone else? Division One, second final time, I think Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just on that point, it seems that the bulk of this bill, and in particular the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Mr. President, goes to great lengths to create special circumstances for this particular type of warrant. So, you know, I'm a little distressed by that, as well as the previous speaker, but sort of for a different reason, Mr. President. And so that's my concern on that.
Are we ready to vote on Division 1? Division 1 being from the beginning of the amendment down to the end of warrant and the period on line 15. All those in favor of Division 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to Division 1, say no.
No.
That portion of the amendment, Division 1, has failed. Division being called, but please stand in regard to all those in favor of Division 1, stand, please. All those opposed. Division 1 has failed. We are now on Division 2. Is there any commentary in regard to Division 2? Senator Hicks, I believe. No, Senator Hicks is. Okay, question being called on Division 2. All those in favor of Division 2, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Division 2 has also failed. Grinding the sausage pretty fine this morning. All those in Division 2 and called you, please stand. All those in favor of Division 2, please stand. Yeah. That Division 2 has failed. We are now on to the next amendment, and I'd ask that that be read in, the Fourth Amendment be read in at this time.
House Bill 29, Third Reading Amendment Number 4, to engross copy. Delete the Johnson Committee of the Whole Amendment.
And that is the Meyer Amendment also, and Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 29 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this really kind of goes into the heart of the matter about whether we're serious about keeping drunk drivers off of our roads. Now, as the bill stands now, a first DUI offense is 90 days. And the prosecutors are purporting in this bill that, yes, we need to do a blood test or an alcohol test on folks without their consent. And at this point in time, that is not the law. And they wish to change that law. Now, if a person decides that they don't want to take a blood test, currently it's 6 months for the first offense. And so now the person has the question to ask himself at that point in time is, do I take the 6 month suspension of my license, or do I take a DUI ask for a 305 deferment, and spend $3,000 to $5,000 to $10,000 on an attorney. So that's the question he has to ask himself. And that's a pretty big question, especially if you don't have $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000. And it's a question that if a person cannot afford an attorney, the state will appoint an attorney. And so this bill really should have a fiscal note on it for the public defender. It doesn't. It didn't go to appropriations, but it is going to cost the state a lot more money if we proceed down the track we are. So, Mr. President, what I sought to do in this amendment was to raise that bar. So that question was whether or not you lose your license for 6 months or spend thousands of dollars on a 305 deferment, or if you have to ask yourself the question, is it 1 year? So for the first offense, Mr. President, it's 1 year if you do not want to take a blood test or an alcohol test. For the second offense, Mr. President, it's 2 years. Mr. President, because we do have habitual offenders, and those are the folks that we really want to target to try to get them off the road. So, Mr. President, Romanet 4, for the period of suspension shall be for 4 years, 8 years, 16 years, and 32 years respectively for the third, fourth, fifth, or sixth or subsequent refusal to submit to chemical testing. So, Mr. President, this gets people who are drunk drivers off the road. That's what we should be looking at. We should not be looking at changing our laws so that we're going to have people go to a 305 deferment and spend thousands of dollars on attorney fees. So, Mr. President, I think this is a good way to keep drunk drivers off the road. It's a good way to ensure that we don't violate what I feel really are the constitutional rights, although court cases have said differently. So, Mr. President, I hope that we have favorable consideration and a good discussion about whether we truly want to keep people off the road.
Discussion. Senator Von Flatter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Point of order. I'd ask the chair to rule on whether this changes the total intent of this bill.
I don't believe that it does. 10 of the bill is specified here says related to driving under the influence, eliminating the driver's right to refuse to undergo the test. Penalty for refusal, in light of right of refusal, I think that it is consistent with what the purpose of the bill is. Is there any further discussion in regard to the amendment? Question being called in regard to third reading amendment number 4 to go ahead, Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, if I could on the amendment, when we're talking about just changing time, there's an assuming that when a person doesn't have a license by this simple reading that they're not going to drive, I'd suggest that there's all kinds of opportunities that have been proven out that you can get limited driving privileges. And what we see is that people under limited driving privileges continue to, if they're habitual, if they're an alcoholic, it's still a challenge for them, and that still puts them behind the car. We see repeat drunk drivers that are driving on limited privileges. We also see drunk drivers that are driving with no privileges. And so just to raise the length of the penalty on refusal doesn't really attack the problem. Doesn't address the problem. And ultimately, one of the things we're talking to, we have to keep in mind, we're also talking about the public safety. Please keep that in mind, and I'd urge no vote on this.
Okay, thank you. Going on, continued discussion on the amendment, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On against the amendment, actually the purpose and the idea of adding additional penalties for refusal to submit has a lot of possibility, and if there was a way to divide it, I'd try and divide that and put that in. But instead of doing that, I just direct your attention that that part of the bill I really like, the amendment that I really like, the part that I really dislike is on page 2, line 6 through lines, in particular lines 6 through 9, which delete pages 2 through 13 of the original bill. And so ultimately it becomes particularly problematic if you delete all of the other provisions that would that the bill would provide for the testing and collection of evidence under a search warrant for a DUI. All that goes away, and the only thing you're left with is the suspension of the license. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you for that. Question on the amendment. All those in favor of this Meyer amendment, please say aye. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
Just to respond to the charge that this doesn't get people off the road. Mr. President, there is a provision in the current statute in this area that you do have ignition interlock devices for habitual offenders. That doesn't go away with this amendment. So if you're a habitual offender, you have those things where you have to blow in there and your blood alcohol is virtually nil before the car will even start. So we don't take that away. That's still in there. So when you get into those areas where you are that habitual offender, you can't drive a car without that. And Mr. President, frankly, if a person's going to violate the law, they're going to violate the law. But, Mr. President, I think this is a better way to handle those circumstances to get people off than to deal with their constitutional rights.
On the amendment, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, yeas and nays, please.
Huh? Yeas and nays being called on the amendment.
No.
Yeas and nays being requested in regard to third reading amendment number 4, House Bill 29. I'd ask the reading clerk or the chief clerk to call the roll, please.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquivel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
No.
Meyer? Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Anderson.
No.
Closing vote closed. 10 ayes, 20 noes.
Third reading amendment number 4, House Bill 29 has failed. We are now back on the bill.
Question.
Yes, Senator Burns.
Attention by the good senator from Natrona County that there was a technical flaw in third reading amendment number 2. So I would ask that you lay this bill back till Monday so that can be corrected, and then I'll probably come with a corrected amendment.
That's correct. We would then lay House Bill 29 back until third reading on Monday. Seeing no objection, I believe that you asked that be done rather than a motion, I believe.
Well, whichever is the proper function.
I believe the term was asked. So,
well, Mr. President,
yes.
Out of curiosity, third reading amendment number 2, my apologies, it did pass.
Okay, it did pass, yes. Having made that request, is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 29 has been laid back till third reading on Monday. House Bill 107, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials, an act relating to jury trials in municipal courts, sponsored by Representative Botten. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. I'd ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 107, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 11.
Senator Jennings, would you like to move and speak to the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 on House Bill 107. On second reading, we pointed out in the state constitution that you have the right to a jury trial, no matter whether it's a civil case or a criminal case. And we also was pointed out by the floor leader that if we killed the bill, that there was still language in there that restricted that. So the amendment that you see in front of you basically takes the bill down to say in cases in the municipal court, there shall be no restriction to a jury trial. I ask for your favorable response.
Senator, or Mr. Majority Floor Leader Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against amendment. First of all, the rules of criminal procedure provide that you are entitled to a jury trial unless you waive the jury trial. So with this amendment, to obtain a jury trial under this section, the person shall request the trial at the time of the arraignment. And so we put the onus, we've kind of flipped the burden there. You're entitled to a jury trial unless you waive it, period. And this particular, once again, I don't care. You can kill the bill if you want. But all this bill does is basically say which, in municipal court, it actually defines which cases you can get a jury trial on. And there was a Wyoming Supreme Court case brought to me by the good senator from Natrona County, Brenner versus City of Casper, in which the Supreme Court talks about jury trials and basically came down on the side that you have a constitutional right to a jury trial whenever you're faced with incarceration. And for most of these municipal court cases, they're not faced with incarceration. It's simply a fine. So do as you will, but I think that passing this amendment kind of flips that burden rather than helping the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and for the amendment, the trouble with the Supreme Court case is it is at variance with the plain language of the Constitution. And Mr. President, we have difficulty dealing with the Supreme Court sometimes they seem to be unable to read the plain language of the Constitution. It says the right of trial by jury shall remain inviolate in criminal cases. It's Article 1, Section 9. Now, as to the procedure, you know, I would submit this amendment is practical because 99.9% of the cases, municipal court, nobody's going to want to ask for a jury trial when all you've got is a fine. We're saying if you're going to with this amendment, it says if you're going to ask for a trial, you've got to give some advance notice because that's you're making an exception to the normal way things are done. And I think that's reasonable. It protects your constitutional right it may do it in a different way than it's done elsewhere in the criminal law. That's fine. But it does give you the protection that the Constitution guarantees. And I think the amendment, the bill is a significant improvement on the current circumstance because it deals with the cases where you're most likely to need a jury trial. But the amendment makes the law comply with the Constitution, and I think it's an excellent amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, and to address the constitutionality of this, if the Wyoming Supreme Court has determined that they can't read the Wyoming Constitution, then the U.S. Supreme Court has also decided that you have to conclude that the U.S. Supreme Court is unable to read the U.S. Constitution. Amendment number Amendment number 6 of the U.S. Constitution provides that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy a right to speedy and public trial by an impartial jury. So you have the same broad, explicit language, but the Supreme Court of the United States for years has determined that only applies in cases where there is, they call them serious, the court has determined that it's only in cases of serious transgressions or serious crimes. And those serious crimes are defined by the United States Supreme Court as being 6 months or more of imprisonment at risk. So if the imprisonment is less than 6 months for the crime, then the United States Supreme Court has said under the Sixth Amendment, under the U.S. Constitution, you're not entitled to a jury trial. Same type of language. Now, the Wyoming Constitution and the Wyoming Supreme Court, particularly in the case Brenner versus Casper and some of the earlier cases, the Wyoming Supreme Court came back and they looked at the U.S. at the Wyoming Constitution and said that like all state constitutions, the Wyoming Constitution can grant additional protection over and above what's guaranteed to citizens under the U.S. Constitution. And so in doing that, the Wyoming Supreme Court granted that additional protection by saying it doesn't matter on what the term of incarceration is. It applies to any term of incarceration. So in doing that, it's followed a similar analysis to the United States Supreme Court in determining that that this particular reference refers to serious crimes, and it has provided the additional protection that any incarceration period whatsoever, regardless of the time, invokes the right to a jury trial, but it said that those that are only fines only are basically non-serious crimes, and therefore, similar to what the U.S. Supreme Court has held, that does not provide you with the right to a jury trial in those minor situations. So, you're free to read the Constitution, both the U.S. and the Wyoming, and decide as you will, but I just wanted to be clear that that's what the rulings of both the U.S. Supreme Court and the Wyoming Court have done, and that's where they are, and you can decide if they're right or wrong and vote the bill up or down. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other discussion on the amendment? Senator Jennings, go ahead, second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. If we haven't learned anything else in this session this year, is that you can take the Constitution and you can give it to a whole bunch of lawyers and judges, and they'll tell us what to think. It's kind of difficult when you can pick the Constitution up and read it that, just us good old boys off the street have to go ask somebody in a bigger ivory tower, what exactly does it mean? And when in our own Constitution it says trial by jury is invalid. I mean, you have to have it. So I don't think it's a big imposition on the courts. I mean, we see right here with the what's in statute right now, they were already violating the Constitution. Maybe it's time that the average guy on the street draw the line in the sand and say, Your Honor, I disagree with you. That's not what I see in the Constitution. Vote it up or down, it's up to you.
Ready for the question?
One question.
Question is in regard to Third Reading Amendment Number 1, House Bill 107. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. Division being called, all those... Division has been called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand.
Well.
That amendment has passed and lesson learned. We are now back on House Bill 107. Yes. I would like to dispense of the bill and then we'll do that if you may. We are now back on House Bill 107. Yes, Senator Case.
Bill, I still think we should oppose this bill. We had the opportunity this morning in your Revenue Committee to interview a municipal court judge who's been appointed to a position with the governor's administration. And I had the opportunity, said, you know, I can't start work right away. I've got a jury trial next week. And I said, we got to talking about jury trials. Found out that he thinks they're great. They don't happen very often. They are kind of an education process for citizens at that level. And there's good things that happen. And I know we've got this amendment, but it's probably better, the Senate's position with this amendment depends on what happens in the rest of the process of the legislature. There's one way we can assure what happens is to kill the bill right now, and that's what I would suggest we do, and protect the rights of our citizens at jury trials.
Senator Scott, go ahead.
Well, Mr. President, read the bill. If you kill the bill, there's no right to jury trial in municipal courts at all. The bill was a good bill. It was trying to grant a right to jury trial in the cases where it's most likely to be used in municipal courts. What we've done is broaden that. But if you kill the bill, your position is that there shouldn't be a right to a jury trial in municipal court. That's a mistake. Read the bill carefully and see what it's doing and see what the current circumstance is. I urge adoption of the bill.
Question being called. House Bill 107, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case. Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Dockstader, Driscoll, Amrick, Esquivel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
No.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Christensen, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
House Bill 107, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 107 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I move that my name be removed from House Bill 107.
Senator Nutting, I apologize to you, but we usually try to protect our third reading.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I grant that.
And my last group is just leaving. We've had such heated and interesting discussion today. And while this has gone on, we've had a number of groups from Sunrise Elementary, and we haven't been able to stop to welcome them, and the last few are just now leaving. So if you could join me in welcoming them as they're on the way out.
And I would say, let's see, House Bill 152, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 152, Very Rare or Uncommon Area Designation, and Act Relating to the Environmental Quality Act, sponsored by Representative Semlick. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. I'd ask that that be read in.
House Bill 152, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Are you? Yes, go ahead, Senator Hastert. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 152 and ask for your favorable consideration. What the amendment simply does is removes privately owned land to be newly designated as very rare and uncommon. It was one of the bigger part of the debates that we heard on this bill and some of the concerns. Mr. President, less than 220,000 acres in Wyoming have been designated very rare and uncommon, and most of that is in Adobe Town in southwest Wyoming. It's about 185,000 acres. There's about 63 million acres of land in Wyoming, and about 48% of that is federally owned, about 3% is state-owned. Thus, less than 0.4% of Wyoming land has been designated very rare and uncommon. And none of these designated very rare and uncommon in Dobytown is privately held. The request for very rare and uncommon has been in place, Mr. President, since about 1976, and it appears that as many applications have been rejected that have been accepted. The process has been working reasonably and can be expected to work even more reasonably by specifically excluding private lands from the possibility of that kind of designation. Many important historical places like Fort McKinley and the Medicine Wheel have been designated. Culturally important places have been designated like Devil's Tower. Adobe Town has been designated largely because it has geological features that are found nowhere else in Wyoming and perhaps nowhere else in the country or world, Mr. President. So with that, you know, that was seemed to be the large part of the concerns. I really feel that rare and uncommon has worked well for us, and removing the major concerns of allowing for private land. You know, I know that in the Sand Creek area, that request did include some private lands, and the EQC denied that request. You know, so we're seeing the process work well. This takes away the concerns of any of the private lands being designated, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Hicks, go ahead.
Mr. President, speaking against the amendment, and I will explain why. Since the state of Wyoming has enacted the very rare and uncommon designation, we've seen a broad expansion of federal use of the National Environmental Policy Act, a broad expansion of the use of their authorities to incorporate additional protections on federal lands such as research natural areas, special management areas, wilderness study areas, areas of critical environmental concern, national monuments, and Historic Preservation Act. So the idea that just putting another state designation over federal land really doesn't speak to the issue that the federal government has all the tools in the toolbox to be able to accomplish this very thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. President.
Other comment, Senator Bebout, go ahead, please.
Now, thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, and I appreciate what my colleague's trying to do, but if you just read this amendment and plug it in, I think you're really doing some disservice to some people that, in fact, do own the private lands. First of all, you know, if you look at it, the privately owned lands, is that surface or is that surface and minerals or just minerals? And then if you look at our takings law that goes out there, it clearly separates those two. So, in fact, you have some language that I think is direct conflict of what you're trying to accomplish. The second thing, Mr. Chairman, is what about the de facto possibility that exists if you do own the private surface and or minerals, and by deleting the language for notification and taking out the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act, then I, as a landowner, if something is being declared rare or uncommon next to me, you do not notify me, and you take away my rights to be involved in the court procedures. So, you know, this may be well-intended. I don't like it for a lot of other reasons, but it just won't work.
Other discussions? Senator Driscoll, go ahead.
Speaking on and opposed to it, this goes absolutely opposed to what the Act itself actually even did. You pull the private lands out, and you do it. Private minerals, there's lawsuits at Sand Creek over minerals filed on public ground. So it goes far beyond just private grounds. This gets it out to the point that you're really doing a major taking and reaching through some other statutes to get there. I really encourage you to vote against it.
Other question? Question being called. Regard to third reading amendment number one, House Bill 152, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion in regard to House Bill 152? Seeing none, House Bill 152. Having been read three separate times, the question is still a bill passed. Chief Clerk will please call a roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
House Bill 152. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 152 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're ready at that order of business for consideration bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Christensen, would you like to come take the chair, please?
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 90. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 90, Vehicle Restoration, an act relating to motor vehicles, sponsored by Representative Byrd. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator, Mr. Chairman Schiffer.
Wire me, Big Daddy.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report. It do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 90, Vehicle Restoration, and to walk us through this great little bill. I yield the floor to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, I bring you the crown jewel of the 61st Wyoming legislation, House Bill 90, Vehicle Restoration. It's a good little one-pager. What this bill effectively does is allow people who are interested in restoring a vehicle to get the title or request a title for the vehicle without having to be bonded and provide a surety bond. This is basically for hobbyists and enthusiasts who don't want to have to pay the $400 or $500 surety bond to restore a vehicle as they're tinkering around in the garage. If you look to page 2 of the bill, there's a couple of details. When you're applying, the applicant has to provide an affidavit of vehicle ownership, a notarized bill of sale, a certified written statement of the value of the vehicle, and a vehicle identification number inspection at the time of the application, Mr. Chairman. It discusses about if the vehicle cannot be valued, and it provides a procedure for that, which is consistent with other statutes. On page 12 through 15, excuse me, lines 12 through 15, it discusses that any title issued under this subsection shall state on its face that it is non-transferable for 180 days from the date title issued. That's to attempt to prevent any fraud or trying to circumvent the intent of the policy, which is just to allow this for hobbyists and enthusiasts. It goes on to say in lines 16 through 18, only vehicles shall only be eligible to be titled under this section if, on the date the applicant purchased the vehicle, it was not operational and could not have been rendered operational without substantial repairs to one or more of the vehicle's mechanical systems, Mr. Chairman. So basically, this is a bill for the folks who want to sit in their garage with an old red 57 Chevy pickup truck that's broken and slowly try to put it back together as a hobby and allow them to do that without buying a surety bond on the vehicle, Mr. Chairman. I hope the body will look favorably upon this little bill, and I hope we can move on quickly, Mr. Chairman.
Question having been called, you ready for the question? Sorry. Senator Perkins.
Just a quick question, and I'm just wondering, wasn't sure on line 10, we've got there submitting a certified written statement, and I don't know if that's the right word, if that should be verified or notarized, but I'm not sure that certified is the right word there. Do you have, maybe the sponsor can help us with that.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure about that. I would certainly welcome, if there is better language, I'd welcome an amendment on second reading, if that's a problem, and I'd be happy to discuss with the person, the good senator who asked the question on that matter.
You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 90, say aye. Opposed, say no. House Bill 90 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is 103.
House Bill 103, Wichee Repayment Program, an act relating to the Western Regional Higher Education Compact, sponsored by Representative McKim. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Nutting, and Scott. No, Senators Martin and Schiffer. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bills, Chairman Scott.
Moving the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 103 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 103, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 17.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, let me very briefly tell you a little about the bill. This is in the Wichee program, which is a long-standing, very excellent program the state has, that we're involved with a number of the western states, and basically the deal we made is that so we don't have to have graduate schools in everything, we will make an arrangement with the other states where we can put up some money for each of the students that come, and they'll get in-state tuition or in the undergraduate area where we'll have reciprocal reduced tuitions. This is relating to where we're sending students to graduate schools in other states and winding up paying their state tuition. We're on the receiving end in pharmacy where we have a pharmacy program. Which has been different from our other programs in the health area, Ms. Chairman, whereas if a student goes to the WAMI program, which is our medical school at the University of Washington, a student goes to the dental slots we've got in the schools in Nebraska, if they don't come back to practice in Wyoming, they have to repay us. And Wichita has had no repayment requirement, although a number of the other states in Wichita have a repayment requirement, and that is spreading. What the bill, as it comes to us, does is impose a repayment requirement for dentistry, medicine, and podiatry. And that's well and good, except that we cut out virtually all the new students there with the governor's 10% budget cuts in response to that. So at the current moment, semi-academic. Your committee number 10 decided in the standing committee amendment that we ought to apply that repayment principle to occupational therapy, physical therapy, optometry, and physician's assistants, because we are short in all those categories. And when we send a student to Wichita on the state dollar, we think there ought to be a come back and practice in Wyoming for a while or repay us provision will get us, Mr. Chairman, some more students in that. In doing that, we had to move the dates because students are already making their decisions on these programs. Some of them have already made them. And it's not fair to change the rules after they have applied, signed up, et cetera. So we changed the date on page 2, the 2012-2000, changed it 2013-2014. So it applies not to the school year starts this next fall, but the school year after that, so that we don't mess any students up. And that change is academic for, at this point, for the potential medical and dental students, because there aren't any slots this next year, new slots, because of that budget cutback. Ms. Chairman, we did not, in the standing committee amendment, there's a provision for veterinary medicine, and that is highly used. And we did not touch the existing arrangement for veterinary medicine because, now, Committee 10 is Labor, Health, and Social Services, and we don't know what we're doing when it comes to veterinary medicine. We were afraid we might mess up some other programs. Some of us know from practical experience that large animal vets are in short supply and small animal vets are a dime a dozen, and there's some reasons for that. But we did not change the veterinary arrangements in this amendment. So, Ms. Chairman, that's an explanation of the standing committee amendment. Be happy to answer any questions on the standing committee amendment. I urge its adoption.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question of the good chairman. Line 21, page 4, line 15, the insertion of occupational therapy. Wondered if there was any conversation about the fact that we do have a good program in place in state on that particular discipline. Just wondered if you visited a little bit about that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, no, we did not, but my understanding is that that program is offered through University of North Dakota. I don't think it qualifies for Wichita, but where we are sending somebody through Wichita, then there would be a repayment requirement in occupational therapy.
And the numbers involved are not great. As I remember, they are less than 10 students a year. It's not zero, but there are not a lot of students. But, you know, occupational therapists, Mr. Chairman, is something that we're going to need and going to need more of as the population ages. So we are encouraging them to come back to Wyoming to practice.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the senator from Natrona County to explain page 4, section D. I didn't understand why they shouldn't repay that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, page 4, lines 21 through 24, we're taking those out because that was the exemption, and what we're doing is putting that provision back in so that the veterinary students are not subject to the repayment. Frankly, there's some complications in the veterinary area, and we knew just enough to know that we didn't understand what we were doing there, so we tried to leave the veterinary students in exactly the same position that they are right now.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, one question of the sponsor on page 4, subsection B, where it relieves the obligations to repay. Is that a permanent deferral, or is that just a temporary deferral until they have the ability to repay?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, we're on the amendment. Is that what you're on? If not, you want to get on it?
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 103, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion to adopt the Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 103 is passed. Back on the amendment, or back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the question on page 4, paragraph B, that's a standard provision in our other repayment circumstances, and every now and then you get some kind of a circumstance where it's typically the repayment comes because a student, and I'm speaking now of our experience in our other repayment programs, which have primarily been medicine and dentistry, a student gets specialized training, student has personal circumstances, they don't choose to come back to Wyoming. We're pretty hard-nosed about that. You've got to give them the option. You can't say you have to come back. You violate the 13th Amendment. But so you've got to give them a repayment option. And we typically have been very insistent. But every now and then, a student can't come back and go into practice. Usually it's some kind of medical thing has arisen where personally they are physically unable to go into practice. And you do have that kind of hardship, and you're permanently relieving them of that burden. You need to have that out so that you don't get an individual caught in an impossible circumstance where you're just piling on and adding to some tragedy. And that's all that is. Our experience elsewhere is it isn't much used, but it can be used. I can tell you, I've had quite a number of communications from doctors who've gone on our various programs and been greatly offended that they were required to repay when they didn't come back to Wyoming. And the answer is tough.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 103, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 103 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 141. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 141, Governmental Immunity, Waiver for Hospital Employees, and Act Relating to Governmental Immunity, sponsored by Representative Conley. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Escobel, Hickson, Perkins, no. Senator Christensen, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Your pleasure, Senator Perkins. Chairman Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole rise to report that this was a favorable recommendation on House Bill 141. For an explanation of the bill, I ask that you call upon the good senator from the ivory towers.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't prepared to necessarily do this bill, so I hope I do it justice. But, again, it's a good little quick bill, hopefully, Mr. Chairman. And what it does is it clarifies some language. There was a shortcoming in statute when some legislation was passed a while back that addressed 35-2910, which was a quality management function for healthcare facilities. The B provision of that states that healthcare facilities subject to or licensed pursuant to this act shall not harass, threaten, discipline, or in any manner discriminate against any resident, patient, or employee of a healthcare facility for reporting to the division a violation of any state, federal law, or regulation, or rule. Based on that provision, there have been cases in recent history that have been pursued, but when it comes back to it, there's no provision in statute that allows, based on a court case, any government liability, because there was not a clause put under 139-109, which is liability for medical facilities, to allow for compensation under that original claim. So there needed to be two parts to the original statute. There was only one part, and this particular bill goes back and remedies that. So you can see on page 2, one short sentence is added to the liability medical facilities provision, which indicates that a government entity is liable for damages resulting from a violation of 35-2910B, which was the statute that I read. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions if possible, but as I said, I'm not entirely familiar with this particular bill. I hope that will suffice, but I'll address any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, and I would represent to you this, actually somewhat of a policy decision to make on this bill. What you're doing in this bill is typically, if you look, this is in the Governmental Immunity Act. And so this is subject to the caps of $250,000 and the other issues that apply to hospitals and medical facilities that fall under this act. Generally, what would happen is, in a whistleblower situation, you would have an employee that most likely is operating outside the scope of their employment. And so they have done something, and then there's a whistleblower who then brings that to the attention of someone else. And then as a result of that, that whistleblower is either fired or they're demoted or they're harassed or there's something else that happens to them, which is ultimately maybe outside the scope of that employee who's making the bad choices and potentially acting outside the scope of theirs. It actually makes the entity liable for actions that may actually have been beyond the scope of the employee's work, the offending employee, and may have been actually beyond the scope of their employment. In other words, may have been for acts that they were not really authorized to do, but nevertheless did. And so in that situation, the liability isn't going to rest with the offending employee. It's going to rest with the entity to pay back the individual who's the whistleblower for any damages that they have, subject to the other limitations of the governmental immunity. So it's a little bit of a policy change because we're going to hold the governmental entity now strictly liable for those actions, whether or not that individual was necessarily within the scope of their employment. And that's the question. And there's no question that if someone can be damaged, their reputation can be ruined, that they can certainly be harmed. But that's the policy decision that this bill brings before the body. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
So the way I read that discussion is that what we're doing here
is substituting a deep governmental pocket for the attorneys to reach into that makes it more profitable to bring these suits when something happens here, and that this may have some significant expense, that this is more than just telling the hospital that they can't harass a whistleblower or something. This is making them pay for all kinds of things that may have been done by somebody else. Mr. Chairman, that would give me real reservations about this bill. I would hope we could have a little more discussion as to what this thing is really doing and how its implications tie in, because I would think you also had 1983 implications in this, at least where the hospital is governmental.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we explain by creating the exception the way you have, what happens with the cap on the damages? I mean, are we exempting them? Are we creating liability up to the cap, or are we creating liability with no cap?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding as we went through the bill, as we worked it in committee, as we talked about that, that question came up, and the answer that we arrived at was that it's within the cap. It's within the cap that you have for it's in the same section that deals with any other liability for any other person who may have, for example, a malpractice case in a hospital, that there's a cap in there, and that cap is $250,000. This is in the same section, so it's in, we believe it's under the same cap, so that the maximum amount of damages that could be out there would be $250,000. That was our analysis.
Senator Nicholas.
Just to follow up that, but with respect to hospitals, in most instances they have insurance, and I think it's a $250,000 cap, or if there's insurance, it's the cap. So if the hospital has a $1 million policy, then it's $1 million available, I think.
Senator Perkins?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's exactly right. Ultimately, the $250,000 cap applies unless you're insured. And so to the extent of the insurance coverage you have, that's a waiver of the cap. So I think the good chairman's exactly right. The governmental cap is $250,000, but if there's insurance or other coverage that exceeds that, then it can be in addition to that amount. I think that's a true statement.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question. Am I right now? Understanding that if the hospital itself or some of its supervisor acting within the scope of their employment goes and harasses or discharges this whistleblower, the hospital is liable regardless of this bill under all kinds of other provisions starting with 1983. Is that correct, or is that a misunderstanding of the circumstances?
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, and to my good colleague from Natrona County, my understanding of this bill is that's exactly what this addresses, that right now there isn't a provision for that. So while the Lestal, good colleague from Natrona County, is correct to some extent regarding somebody operating outside of their capacity at the hospital, and obviously we wouldn't necessarily want to hold the hospital responsible if somebody is not acting in good faith, is totally outside of their responsibilities. There still is the possibility that somebody acting in the capacity of their office within there, it says healthcare facilities subject to a license to pursue into this act shall not harass, threaten, discipline, or in any manner discriminate against any resident. Mr. Chairman, I would argue that what that says is that if somebody is operating outside of their capacity, they are not the healthcare facility subject to a license to pursue into this act. If they're operating outside, they're probably going to be held liable in an independent capacity, and that would be something that the courts could decide. But what we have right now, Mr. Chairman, is a situation where the courts are not allowed to grant any damages, even if they do hold against the healthcare facility, because there isn't proper language in place to allow for that. So I would say that what we're doing right now is not giving the courts the opportunity to make that interpretation, and what we're trying to do through this piece of legislation is to allow them to say, all right, this person wasn't acting in their capacity, so we're not going to hold the hospital responsible. That's one option. The other option, Mr. Chairman, would be it is the healthcare facility's fault to some degree. They are responsible, and damages should be awarded. So to the extent that this allows that increased flexibility, it allows the courts to operate as they're supposed to operate, and to that extent, I think it's a good bill. Regarding the cap discussion that we had between the two good lawyers, I don't know the details of that, and I would certainly defer to the good senator from Natrona County on the details of the $250,000 cap.
Thank you. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. And just to clarify, what this does right now, where the statute is right now, the entire statute of 139-109, you see it on page 1 and across the top of page 2 on the bill. And so that's where this goes. And so what this does now is add a new section B, and I think the Tall Center from Natrona County makes the very good point. Typically, if I don't do 1983 action, so I don't know about what I remember from law school, but that ultimately what you is you're denied some right. In this case, it would be a property or an income right under color of state law. And one of the ways one of the defenses to that is that the employee who made that mistake or the employee who made that wrong was not acting within the scope of their employment. And if they're not acting within the scope of their employment, that's a defense to the entity to not necessarily pay. I believe what this does when we do this is now, B, it just makes a flat statement, which is the language of the bill. A governmental entity is liable for damages resulting from a violation of 35-29-10B. And 910B is whistleblower language, saying that you can't harass, you can't fire, you can't demote somebody who's a whistleblower. And so right now, in those situations, there's not really it says you can't do that, but there's not really a remedy or a right to the employee who's wronged under those circumstances. However, I believe that what the bills it is right now is makes it strictly liable whether or not the employee who's acting wrongfully is within or without acting within or outside the scope of their employment. I believe that any retribution against a whistleblower now makes the governmental entity liable. I believe that's what this bill does. And that's why it's the policy decision that I bring to the body.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, again on that point, my interpretation would be based on what B says. Now we're going to, well, let's look. Line 2 of the bill, or page 2, excuse me, lines 4 and 5 say, a government entity is liable for damages resulting from a violation of statute 35-29-10-B. Well, that statute says health care facilities subject to or licensed pursuant to this act shall not harass, etc. To that extent, it's the health care facility entity that is the agent of action. So if we have a case, as the good senator points out, where somebody is acting outside of that healthcare facility or outside of their role, then I would argue that that's not necessarily going to lead them to being responsible. All right, so that's one interpretation, and as I see on a strict reading, I don't see where that concern is the accurate concern. But that said, I think we could probably look at some way to amend the language, and perhaps the words may be held liable for damages or something along those lines. So that we certainly give that flexibility to the courts might be a potential remedy. And I'd be interested to hear from the good senator from Natrona County if he would feel more comfortable with language along those lines, because I certainly wouldn't be averse to it.
Further discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 141, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 141 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman, Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in flavor?
Aye.
Signing of enrolled acts. Senate enrolled act number 65.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 65 being original Senate File 33.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 65, original Senate File 33. I'm so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 66.
Senate Enrolled Act 66 being original Senate File 79.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 66, original Senate File 79. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 67.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 67 being original Senate File 144.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 67, original Senate File 144. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 68.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 68 being original Senate File 1.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 68, original Senate File Number 1. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk for the morning.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:15. There are those committees that I think have some talk about interim topics at noon recess here. Make way for them to get their food first, and we'll be back at 1:15.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet with its counterparts in the House on joint interim topics at the noon recess, so as quick as we can reasonably get there once the House is out in the House committee room, talking about interim topics.
Okay. Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. President, I got three announcements. First of all, for the Education Committee, we will not be meeting on adjournment today. We will not be meeting over the noon hour. They're working through the noon hour. For the House Bill 127 Committee, which is recalibration, attention Senator Von Flader and Senator Meyer, we will meet over in H-10, the House room, Monday on adjournment, so you can work on it over the weekend and figure out how you're going to show them where they're wrong, which is always what we try to do. And then for the Conference Committee on House Bill 13, remind you, Senator Barnard and Senator Raffas, adjournment today over in H-10, the House room.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Conference Committee on Senate File 9 will be meeting Monday at 9 o'clock in room S-18 in the House, or in the Senate. That's myself, Senators Geis and Raffas.
Senator Case, and then Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Select Committee on Tribal Relations will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in room H-8 to discuss interim topics.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number 8 will meet with the House Committee on Transportation shortly after noon recess over in House Room 11 to talk about interim topics.
Any other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. The motion was that we stand at recess until 1:15 this afternoon. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. We are at recess until 1:15 this afternoon.